He's given it to Jacobs and then gone darting forward. Jacobs trying to get the ball into the centre. Picked up by Cisse, and Bellingham's going to get there first, and England might be able to counter-attack here if they're quick. Bellingham, he's got space for Foden on the far side. Kane running through the centre. Kane's got a big chance here now. It's Harry Kane, and England lead 2-0.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
This is our third World Cup podcast.
Yeah. Third, yes.
Yeah, it's the third one while the World Cup's been going. It's fourth all told. Doing the weekly updates. We're not doing the daily updates like some podcasts. I mean, that's just insanity. They're going to come out the other side of this and then realize they've got to do all their Christmas episodes of their podcast, and that's it. They're going to be spent. Spent. Not us. No. We're keeping it dry. Yep.
Certainly are.
There's been too much football to watch, for starters. I mean, we can't put out content and enjoy the football at the same time, can we, Terry?
No. And we have jobs as well.
Well, there is that as well. They do tend to get in the way a bit. Ish. As we speak, it's Monday evening. We are in the gap in the round of 16, or round two, if you prefer. We're in the gap between the Japan-Croatia game, the penalty shootout. First penalty shootout in the knockout stage has just been completed. Heartbreak for Japan. Heartbreak for taking rubbish penalties. At 7 o'clock, so in 3/4 hour's time, we'll be shutting up this podcast to sit down and watch Brazil versus South Korea. Terry, well, it's been a bit of a roller coaster, isn't it, again? The end of the groups were incredible. Some incredible high drama. And now we're at the end of those groups. We've got a real good mixed bag of teams going into the knockout stage. And now we're 5 games into the knockout stage, and it's all pretty much levelling out again. All the teams from outside of UEFA and CONMEBOL have all gone out so far. There's only South Korea and Morocco left in at the moment for us to pin something on for a bit more of a global feel to the quarterfinal stage. Not really a surprise, but a little disappointing.
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing. I mean, if you look at them on paper, then you would sort of think, well, actually, these are predictable. It is not a surprise that the Netherlands would beat the United States. Netherlands are a powerhouse in international football and of the World Cup. They eat round of 16s for breakfast. And the US still, you know, although they've been around in World Cups for a while now, they're still, it's still expected that they tend to go out this early stage. And they have a young side. And similarly with Australia, you know, Australia got Argentina. And that's harsh because Argentina, although they've been flawed. And you can go all the way down and say, well, actually, so far, there are no surprises. But it is disappointing that so far, one of the non-UEFA, non-CONMEBOL nations hasn't managed to find their way through to the quarterfinal. But we do have 2 more opportunities before this round of 16 is over.
By the time you listen to this, listeners, you will know the fate of those two sides. We had 3 Asian teams getting into the knockout stage, which has been the most, I think, ever. Also, 2 African teams in there as well, which certainly bucks the trend of recent World Cups as well. 1 CONMEBOL side, so there were 6 out of the 16 were non-UEFA or South American, which bodes well for going forward, if this is the pattern. But whenever you look at what's happened in previous World Cup, it goes up and down all over the place. So it's difficult to draw a pattern. We're going to go into the ins and outs of the different teams that made it through the group stage and some of the drama in that, the end of that group stage. But what we're going to talk about first is the whole thing about changing the format of the World Cup, because next World Cup is going to be 48 teams. That's already decided. What hasn't been decided, so it turns out, according to Arsene Wenger, is the actual format of it. Now, the 4-team groups as it has been for, well, for as long as I can remember anyway. I think it's only, you've got to go back to the 1950s before it goes back to a straight knockout. But 14 groups have been around for nearly every World Cup. And in this one, and in most of the other 32 team tournaments, it's worked out really well. And there's a nice defined way of progressing. Winners of the group play runners up from other groups. You go through to the final. You don't play the team you played in the group stage until you get to the final. And there's just something lovely about it. Of course, on closer inspection, group stages aren't that great. We had three teams that had already qualified by the time they got to their last group stage. They made wholesale changes in their teams and lost their last games. And in some instances, that brought about a change in who went through. So you can't get away from situations where you're going to have a system that can be played. But it works very well. And when you see the drama that we've had over the last week or so, it's easy to get into a mindset of this is not broke. Why on earth are you looking to fix it?
Well, we've been blessed, I think, with this World Cup because we have had these cliffhanger final stages and they've been tremendous fun and very exciting. And I don't think they're necessarily always the case. And yes, in a couple of instances, they were manufactured because teams that had already qualified decided to rotate. So it's not quite as authentic as we might think. The bottom line is that the group stages exist because there's so much effort that goes into attending a World Cup, one qualifying for it, and then attending a World Cup, that it just seems a horrific waste of energy and resources if you just go out after the first game. So you have these round robins really to protect, you know, to protect the investment. Not just of the individual federations, but of the paying public who spend huge amounts of money to go out there, to go to wherever it may be, to go and watch a World Cup and then find that they're going home after one game. So they're a necessary convenience. If you wanted to be proper sporting about it, then you take that kind of Champions League argument and say, oh, well, you know, Champions League has never been the same because, you know, since the European Cup, bring back the European Cup format. Say, well, yes, okay, I can kind of get that. But with World Cups, I think you have to make some kind of consideration for a lot of different parties. And so we have this system whereby we have a bit of a round robin. I assume that we'll have some kind of similar system, although I believe the talk is that, you know, it will be maybe smaller groups, groups of three, but it's not yet been determined yet. But we've said this before, the appetite for participating in the World Cup now is huge. And the desire for many, many nations to improve and to play football and play better football is also huge. The desire for many peoples of these countries to see their teams in the World Cup is huge. And the qualification placements per confederation are skewed towards the bigger configurations. The CONMEBOL have 50%. I'm not quite sure what it is for UEFA. It's not as many as 50, but you're talking about a significant number of UEFA nations going there, with the African nations getting stronger, the Asian nations getting stronger, CONCACAF getting stronger. They want to get in, but UEFA and CONMEBOL don't want to lose their places. So what do? You have to expand. It's just what happens when you have, you know, a sport that's growing at the rate that it is. And that probably needs to be looked at, but that's a much, much broader conversation to be had over many, many years and never to ever be successfully resolved. The only thing that you can really do is expand the tournament and then figure it out. Because we don't know what the format will be, I think it will be easy to be pessimistic about whatever it is. But life finds a way, Graham.
It does. It does find a way. I think as well, as viewers, as punters who sit at home and watch it, or maybe even go to these tournaments, we should be careful not to fall into the narrative that is put out by people in the media who will say, this dilutes the World Cup, this will be far too many games, you get far too many teams who don't deserve really to be there, and you'll have loads of matches that no one's interested in. And this is, I think, a crux of where a lot of people who work in the media have got into this conversation and said, look, big World Cups are bad. Mm. They try and tell you that it's almost impossible to try to have an event like this. If you compare this to the Olympics has 10,000 athletes turning up for it. The World Cup is small fry in comparison.
In one city as well.
Yeah, in one city.
Generally.
Yeah, generally. Yeah, you're right. And multiple events going on at once. So this whole thing about it being too big and unwieldy is a fallacy. It really is. What people don't want, and this is all media companies, not just the TV companies, but it's the people who have to send journalists out to these games, they don't want to have to send people to every game. They don't want to have to send someone to watch Bosnia versus Guatemala because no one's going to read it. But they have to send it there because they want accreditation. They want to be involved with FIFA. ITV don't want to show that. They don't want to put that on for 2 hours. And so you're going to get teams coming in there that, as far as the media company is concerned, they don't want to show. But is there a problem with these teams going to a World Cup? I don't think there is. And I don't see a problem with more football because, you know, I want to see games like that. One thing we have to face up with the size of World Cups, is the fact that this World Cup, I think, is the first one ever where no one qualified for the first time. So this is a 32-team tournament, and the only team that is there for the first time was there as hosts, and they bought their way to the tournament. Mm. No one who went through a qualification process, or no one who successfully went through a qualification process, did so for the first time. They've all been to World Cups before. The Asian qualification is pretty much sewn up. It's the same teams over and over and over again. With African teams, it's a little bit more mixed up recently, but that in many ways reflects the nature of the bigger teams in Africa. So you're not going to get Nigeria qualifying over and over and over again. Cameroon are pretty regular, but even them, they've missed out on World Cups in the past as well. And the African qualification process is harsh.
It's a nightmare.
Really, really, really is
it's
harsh.
Awful. Yeah.
And because they've only got five places. They've got, what, 50 teams going for five places. Of course it's harsh. They do deserve more teams going through there, and that's the way you do develop it. But the whole thing of the fact that we haven't got any new teams here, apart from the ones that dipped their hand in their pockets and sent backhanders out to everyone, that's the only new teams there. I think that's actually one thing that says, no, we've got to do something about the size of it. Yeah, 48 teams isn't great. And I was looking at what Arsene Wenger was saying about the formats. Now, obviously, the three-team groups is really, really unsatisfactory. We had three-team groups in the second stage of the 82 World Cup, but at least for those ones, it was only one team coming through. When you've got two teams going through, it is asking for trouble because, yeah, you're going to get to the last game and teams won't have to bother. Then you say, oh, well, what we could do is we could have penalty shootouts after the game so that there's always a result. Oh, my word. How terrible is that idea? And that is just going to be even worse. Probably going straight to it, not having it any extra time as well. It never works in any competition. When they introduce this in leagues and things like that, this used to be the first season of the J-League, I think they had this.
MLS did it as well.
MLS did it as well. And it just makes you look like a joke league, doesn't it, really?
It sets a really, really, really unfortunate precedent because it might then encourage leagues to switch to penalty shootouts and effectively do away with draws in football. And that is just not something that we do not want a sport that has no draws. That's just pants.
No draws football, yes. Yes. Nobody wants to see that.
Well, I suppose it depends who's playing, really.
Yes, okay.
But you're right, it's worth it. I mean, like, you know, particularly in Africa, I mean, like a World Cup without Egypt, a World Cup without Algeria, a World Cup without Ivory Coast, Nigeria, you know, you want to see these teams playing in a World Cup. And obviously FIFA, for somewhat more cynical reasons, will be desperate to get the Chinese in because they steadfastly refuse to qualify as things are. But getting China into the World Cup is something that wants to win. So there's good footballing reasons and there's also, you know, awful cynical reasons for doing it. And if you focus on the awful cynical stuff, then yeah, you can build a, you know, a narrative in your mind that says that these things are truly awful. My advice to any football fan who thinks that the World Cup will be too diluted after 48 teams is quite straightforward. Only start watching at the quarterfinal stage.
Yes.
Watch other television programs until you get to the quarterfinal stage. And it's the same advice I give to people who watch the Champions League. Wait till the new year then, when it's knockout, and then that's the proper Champions League. That's how it works. It's the same. NHL, wait till the playoffs because the regular season's a complete waste of time. Just wait. It's not a problem at all. But for all of those nations participating in the World Cup that wouldn't have been before, they will be absolutely loving it. They will not be able to get enough of it. And I wouldn't wish to take that away from them. that opportunity at least.
Yeah, that's one thing that one of the many things that this World Cup has been missing is having one team or two teams that are there and just having the best time because they've never been there before. I mean, we've got close to, I suppose, with Wales because it's been so long.
Yes.
It's almost like they've qualified for the first time, but they haven't actually. They have done it before.
No, it isn't.
And of course, with Wales as well, they did get to the semi-finals of the Euros as well. So they have had success in tournaments.
Yeah, people are disappointed with Wales.
Yeah.
People were expecting more from Wales. They were not a typical World Cup debutant. At this point, a senior nation in European football. Or were, anyway. Now they've kind of got to go back to, well, not back to, completely back to square one. Their golden generation is over, isn't it? Over? Is that the right word? Past it? I don't know. Anyway, they need to have a bit of a retool and maybe a restaffing and stuff like that. But that was disappointing. We were disappointed with Wales, for those of us, disappointed, you know, I wasn't, I'm English. I wasn't disappointed at all. But they could have offered more.
Yeah, I think that was the message from Group B, really. I mean, England have been good. There's no two ways about it. They have been good. The game against USA did mire itself down to a 0-0 draw that suited both sides because, I mean, it left England in a position where they'd have to have a completely embarrassing result against Wales, a history-defining result against Wales to be eliminated. And with the US, it made their passage to the next round easier because Iran had been so heavily beaten by England in the first game. And of course, Iran, with everything going on in the background, we thought we weren't really holding out too much hope for what they could do at a tournament. And in the end, they didn't perform at their best. And so USA, maybe they got through by default in the end, really. Wales were too old. Iran were too distracted.
Mm.
It seemed that USA had done enough. And the fact that they ground out that 0-0 against England, which is looking increasingly more impressive, but go up against the Netherlands in the knockout stage. And yeah, they were pretty much taken apart, weren't they?
Yeah, that was pretty rudimentary from Netherlands. I mean, I think the story really for the US is because they've got a relatively young squad.
Yeah.
Perhaps they could upgrade their coach. I don't like to say that because Greg Berhalter seems like a decent man and that you don't want to see people losing their job. He used to play for Palace as well, but maybe a more experienced coach might have been able to have got a little bit more out of them in the crack. But, you know, I mean, going up against Louis van Gaal, you know, serving his notice, not a care in the world, and that team, they seem to be playing for the coach and for themselves. And so, you know, I think Netherlands are always going to be tough. I agree. I mean, I thought that of the three hosts for the next World Cup, the US have got the most to be optimistic about.
Yeah, that's true. We spoke about Canada last week, and maybe they had got a tough draw out of the three of them. And Mexico were disappointing, though, weren't they?
You always want to see Mexico do well. Always want to see Mexico do well. It's just a thing for us. And yeah, that was a difficult one for them. Yeah, there'll be a bit of an inquest there. And they'll be expected to really put a shift in for the next World Cup because on home turf, that's not going to fly in 4 years' time.
No, and it broke a long run of consecutive successful group stages for them as well at World Cups. Okay, they always get knocked out in the first round of the knockout stage. But still, these things are important.
And to lose out to Poland as well, who, you know, Robert Lewandowski aside, were not really worth writing home about, were they, as a team? That was disappointing as well. I mean, yeah, you want to see a bit more from there. So to lose out to Poland was, tough.
How about a quick word about Australia then? Got out of their group, but then knocked out by Argentina, but put up a really good fight of it, didn't they, on Saturday night?
Yeah, and I think I mentioned at the start of all this, they went into the tournament largely unfancied, even by themselves. I don't think there was a great deal of enthusiasm for the squad. But to their credit, you know, they had a difficult qualifying. They had to play a lot of their qualifying games outside of Australia because of COVID. They worked really hard and did really well to get there. But you did fear for them after they got tonked by France. But what a way to come back, though, in the next round. And I think Mitch Duke probably still might get gold of the tournament as things stand at the moment. They played really well against Argentina, despite the fact that they were clearly second best as a team. I was really impressed by the way they handled Messi as well. They weren't trying to take selfies with the guy. They showed him the respect of trying to kick him up in the air whenever they had the chance. And I thought that their approach was spot on. I was a little bit, possibly a bit dismissive of them at the start of the tournament, which I was clearly a mistake. A lot of this is, you know, Australians they are tough competitors. They love sport and they are tough competitors. And it was sorry to lapse into the stereotypical there, but that was heartening to see them come out of it. And you know, hopefully we'll always see Australia qualifying for the World Cups because they're always good value.
That performance against Argentina certainly suggested they deserved their place in the knockout stage. It wasn't just down to the fact of Denmark checking out of the competition.
Yeah, well, there was a bit of that.
There was a bit of that, and it's certainly how it looked. But Denmark weren't tonked by France. And if you have really checked out of the competition, you're asking to be turned over 5 or 6 against this France side. So that was a great win from Australia. And so, yeah, they certainly deserved to be in the second round. What about Senegal's performance against England? I mean, England, obviously, we're very pleased and very happy with that. But do you think we got a decent draw there? We were fortunate enough to get the team that qualified second from the host nations group.
I think Senegal let us off the hook. I think they had us in the first 30 minutes or so. I think that they had the better of us. These words don't fit very well in your mouth when you're talking about England. But when you have the players that England have got, the attacking players that England have got, who can combine in the way that they do, then they will always be dangerous on the break. That's an absolute fact. That's an absolute fact. But the reality is that England were in a somewhat unfamiliar position of really having to wait for a chance to strike in transition, because I think Senegal had actually had control of the game, could have scored, could have taken the lead. Fantastic save by Jordan Pickford. I think that they were putting pressure on those centre-backs. You had those two centre-backs, our two centre-backs, Stones and Maguire, who just didn't know where to put the ball, trying to pass it between themselves, pass it between their corresponding full-backs, trying to find a way through. They were running out of options. But they got not unlucky. England did well to get that first goal. But then they also made the mistake of not shutting the game down after having gone 1-0 down. I think they felt slightly outraged that they'd been able to control the game, but go down a goal, go chasing that equaliser before half time, and then they get sucker punched again. And then the game is over and they've kind of lost their spirit, really. I mean, like they do a lot of teams do. They come out of the second half and try and get one back. But I mean, England are just not that bad. It's got to be said, they're just not that bad. They're too professional to let something like that go. I still feel that any opponent of England would look at those first 30 minutes and say, this is where we put England under pressure. But obviously, you've got to make your chances count. Now, in France's case, they have the players, I think, to do that. And so I'm a bit worried about that. So I feel bad for Senegal because I think that they played the right game. But yeah, but England these days are really, really very good. And it has to be said that they are very, very good. They've got super dangerous players and you can't let them off the hook. So that's the story of the game for me.
They look great coming forward, but they don't look that bad in defence either, which I think everyone had a question mark over. This guy, they found Harry Maguire, not to be confused with the Harry Maguire who plays for Manchester United occasionally. wherever he's come from, he's been a revelation, isn't he?
I don't know. He does remind me a bit of the other Harry Maguire. He does like a misplaced pass, it's got to be said, which does worry me a bit.
That's the modern way, though, that is now.
Well, what could be said? I mean, everybody who said that Harry Maguire was the wrong choice is still right, in my opinion. There's nothing... Harry Maguire did nothing to tell anyone outside Gareth Southgate why he should be selected. But you know what? GS has gone, nah, this is my guy and I'm sticking with him. And okay, yes, I know he's, if anything, he played even worse during the last Nations League, but I'm going to stick with him and give him that chance. And I think we all said, like, this is where Gareth Southgate will rise or fall in his decision to select and stick with Harry Maguire. And so far it has paid off. And yes, a few individual errors aside, he's played pretty well. He's been a threat going forward, I think. He's been dangerous and he's playing with tremendous confidence. You have to wonder what on earth his club are going to do with him because, goodness, no. I mean, imagine if, I mean, I think...
Sell him.
Yeah.
January's coming.
His stock must be high. His confidence will be high. Whatever happens next to England, he's restored his reputation. He's presumably restored his confidence. I doubt they'll play him. They should sell him. They should sell him for a tidy sum. Maybe sell him to Roma. Go and play alongside Chris Smalling with Mourinho in Roma. That would be great. Yeah. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, he'd never play for England again, though, would he?
Oh, no, of course. Yeah. Well, he doesn't need to now, Graham.
No, this is true. This is true. If he was playing for any other team, you know, he would be up on people's list at the moment of an ill-advised World Cup purchase, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he is. I think he is, because I mean, you're right. I mean, he's not. There's two things around Manchester United that are for sale: the club itself and Harry Maguire, I suspect. So yeah, I reckon someone will come in and
yeah, like you can imagine Leicester sniffing around Niklas Füllkrug.
I reckon, yeah. Niklas Füllkrug has got a whiff of Brendan Rodgers signing about him. I think you've got something there. No, not even they would be that foolish.
Should we have a quick chat about Germany? Because they did go out.
Yeah.
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 So what's the story then? I mean, was there a more about inevitability in the end, or about the way they went out? And the way they went out was quite comical, I suppose, in the end.
I think there's quite a lot of anger. But also, I think I mentioned last week that the conversations broadened out to the structure. And other people are saying, well, look, hang on a second. There was that 20-minute period against Japan where it all went horribly wrong. And if that hadn't have happened, then there's every likelihood that Germany would have beaten Japan, got a creditable draw against Spain, and then beaten Costa Rica, and then they would be through. And these are the margins. Whereas other people, probably the majority, are saying, nope, the problem's structural. We need to sack the president. We need to sack Oliver Bierhoff. We need to sack Hansi Flick. We need to completely, you know, flush out the squad, completely ignoring the fact that you've genuinely got some of the best footballers in the world playing in that team. It's really difficult to know where they go next. There's call for Das Reboot 2. I know, I wonder whether or not that's right. Decisions like sticking with Thomas Müller for too long, was that an idea? Bringing back Mario Götze, was that a great idea? And then again, I think I mentioned last week, like Jamal Musiala, who's like, you know, superb player, but, you know, educated in England. And I wonder whether or not stuff like that rankles. It's like, why are we getting our best players from the English? When did that happen? When did we get to the point where we're seeing more and more English guys going over to Germany and, like, you know, showing them how it's done to a certain degree. And there's this sense that Germany has kind of lost its identity and has lost its touch. Even though, as I said, actually, objectively, look at that squad of players. There's some fine players there, you know, Champions League winners, you know, proper footballers there. So it's difficult to square off, really, to a certain degree. I suppose you just have to leave them to it and see what they say. But the clock is ticking. In a year and a half, they're hosting the Euros. And that's a tournament they will be wanting to win. And at this point, they will be wondering whether they could make it out of their group.
It's weird, though, when you look at it on paper and you look at what happened in their group, because people are looking at Spain as potential winners for this tournament. And you look at the record, Spain, they beat Costa Rica. Well, so did Germany. They drew with Germany. Well, yeah, Germany drew with Spain. That's how it works. And Spain lost to Japan, just like Germany did. So at the end of it, it was really just the fact of who could score more goals past Costa Rica, and it was Spain rather than Germany. That 7-0 obviously helped them out tremendously. So as far as results are concerned, you've got one team that is assessed as being an absolute shambles because they're going home, and another one as being potential favourites because they're going through. I personally cannot wait for that Morocco game to see what actually happens there.
Yeah, no, me too. That's going to be a fantastic game of football, or at least certainly very dramatic. Yeah, I mean, just finally on Germany. I mean, obviously they failed to get out of the group for the last World Cup. So there is this sense of national indignity around it. But it might just be that this is just a few games of football that they've kind of botched. But in fact, actually, in every other respect, there's really no reason to panic. And it might be that there's been quite a lot. Like Bierhoff's been running the show there for like 18, 19 years. You know, that's a long time. And in that time, you're likely to make a few enemies, and there's people probably going to have an axe to grind against you. And then maybe there's this desire to sort of like see some changes because it's an opportunity to sort of like get rid of and settle old scores and stuff like that. So, I mean, it could also be horribly political as well. I don't know. I'm not that close to it. But it is extraordinary times, really. I mean, the idea of Germany failing to qualify for their group in two successive World Cups. No wonder they're up in arms. I mean, you know, that is it's poor show.
It's interesting what you say about the fact that they could be looking to England and say, well why are we getting our best young players from there, either at club level or even at international level? I mean, even if you go to look at someone like Serge Gnabry, who's basically served his apprenticeship over in England as well. I wonder as well if there are people who are in positions of authority in Germany who have a little bit of beef about where investment comes from and about whether or not the 50+1 could be relaxed a bit to help their own clubs develop a bit more or compete a bit better, whether or not they're going to use that as some kind of like little stick or a little point of argument for them to say, this is why we don't have a decent team. Look at England. They're producing all of our best players over there because the Premier League has all this money and all this freedom to go and get investment from wherever it likes, no matter how blood-soaked and shady it may be.
Well, I mean, yeah, to an extent. But, I mean, England's improvements have also, because the FA had a complete reform and they've rebuilt their coaching setup. That's not so much because of the Premier League clubs. That's the FA taking the lead there. We've got far more coaches coaching much, much better quality of football these days. And we're bringing – there's criticisms of that, about that system, that we tend to perhaps have too many cookie-cutter players. But, you know, they're all tactically aware, tremendous technique. You know, we watch non-league football at Whiteleaf, and the players at Whiteleaf, and this is not uniform at non-league football, but the youngsters at Lightleaf, who it should be said, have not made the grade, they can really play football. When you compare to, say, watching, say, you know, non-league football, say, from 5-10 years ago on that ground, these kids, they can really play. You know, no one is saying they're international quality, but they know how to play tactical football. They know how to. They've got great first touch. They look up. They know how to scan. They've got all the basic skills of being a decent modern footballer. And this is the English system now. So, needless to say, the best of our players are becoming objects of considerable envy, and they can do things like what they did against Senegal. And they can, you know, apparently be on the back foot and yet win 3-0.
That's what we do nowadays.
I know. It just feels odd and strange. But also what's even odder and stranger about it, Graham, is that, you know, this is the first wave of this generation. This is the direct consequence of us dropping out in 2010, of us getting humped by Germany.
Yeah.
That great young German side who, I don't know, oh yeah, Frank Lampard, Kostenlein, blah, 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 whatever. We were absolutely schooled by that team in 2010. And then we went away and said, right, we're just going to do what they've done or what the Spanish are doing, or we're going to do our own thing and we're going to make it work. And this is the first wave, that under 17 World Cup winning side that came through. And if we're carrying on like this, then there's more to come. But we also then have to look at Germany and say that it's not an inevitability.
No.
These things don't always happen like this. But we are blessed with, when we've got Bellingham for maybe 3 World Cups, let that sink in, guys.
That is incredible. And the fact that, yes, he is 19. And yes, everyone does say that every time that they start talking to him. But it is really, really important when we think about that we've got players like this. And the fact that he's in the same side, he's playing with players like Saka, like Foden as well.
Mm.
And there are others on the bench who similarly went to those underage World Cups as well.
Yes.
And there's other players in those teams that didn't make the grade. But there are others who are coming through as well. And whether or not they get to play for England or whether or not Germany try and snaffle them up again is another thing entirely. Yeah. Putting their beach towels on the players and they're like, yeah, I know your game.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, I think they need a better system than that. Otherwise there could be trouble. There could be trouble. Just a quick note, the Henderson-Bellingham bromance. Bellingham is so good that he gets an England goal out of Henderson. I mean, that's how good Bellingham is.
Yeah. Strange times, listeners. This is it.
Yeah.
It's all end of days. It's like dogs and cats living together, isn't it?
Well, anyway, it doesn't really matter because this time next week it'll all be over because I can't see us getting past France.
No, I can't. But then again, next week will be a real party if we do, won't it?
Yes, it will.
I mean, yes, they've got Kylian Mbappe. And yes, it could be Kyle Walker's last game for England, I think, because he's going to be the one who's got to mark him, which could be entertaining. All right, they've got Mbappe, but they've also got Hugo Lloris as well.
They do. They've had their shaky moments as well. Yeah. I mean, I think England will score against France.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think so as well.
Yeah, but yeah. I just think France will score more, that's all.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think either side really need to turn on the style that much to score either. But I think they could end up cancelling each other out, though, so it could be a real old dirge of a game.
That is in the back of my mind, is that if it just, at this point, it starts to get a bit tense from both sides and it ends up going to penalties or something like that.
Yeah.
If both teams play as they should, it'll be a high-scoring, probably win to France, in all seriousness. But I think you're right. We're at this point now where things could start to get tense. And, like, you know, Mbappe can seize up just like anybody else has. He's done it before. Even with the Euros, he didn't. I mean, they got knocked out by Switzerland and he didn't have the best game. So it can happen, but, yeah.
Well, yeah, we're not going to give any predictions on that one then.
Well, we predicted everything, haven't we? We predicted a score draw. We predicted a narrow scoring win. We predicted a dirge. It is a game in which anything could happen, absolutely. And yeah, it's foolish to predict at this point now because, you know, we're at that point in the World Cup where it's just pointless, and also because this World Cup has defied any kind of prediction.
Well, in which case, because we've got 3 minutes now before Brazil kick off, who are your favourites now then?
Well, my favourites are still Brazil.
Yeah.
And from the UEFA teams, I would still say it is France, but I have to say that if England can navigate their way past France, then I think that's all off. I think England, as objectively as I can, I think England are genuine contenders for this tournament.
I've got a sneaky feeling that any one of those teams, once a quarterfinal stage is set, I think any one of them can get it.
Yeah.
I think it is so open.
Portugal, we've really not actually talked that much about Portugal in the last couple of weeks for some reason or another.
Well, mainly because it's been just before they played. The timing
true.
Hasn't helped.
Yeah, it's the way they fall in the draw.
Yeah.
But they've been good.
Yeah.
They've been good and also bad.
What I noticed most about it was it's not all been about Ronaldo. The game that I really was impressed by them was the 3-2 against Ghana when Bruno Fernandes set up the last two goals.
Yes.
Ronaldo was in space for both of those and he didn't pass to him. He passed to the better player and they scored. That shows you something about Portugal. They're saying, yes, yes, he's brilliant. We all love him and everything like that, but he's not the most important player here.
Yeah, we can play too. Yeah, absolutely.
It's shaping up to Portugal-Spain in the quarterfinals, which should be great, should be brilliant.
Yeah.
They might not do. There might be a surprise there. But of course, Brazil-Argentina is still on the cards in the semi-final. There are some huge games coming up, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. You just want the idea of that Brazil-Argentina, man alive, in a World Cup. Gosh, we should go and watch some football.
We should go and watch. Let's go and watch to see if Brazil actually do get there, because they do have the small matter of beating South Korea right now. So we're going to see how that goes. Yes, that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, and from Terry the Fellow, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
I watched this really odd football match on Saturday, actually, about 5 minutes of it, and it was really weird. One, it was not in Qatar. Two, the shirts they were wearing had, like, writing on them, and, like, one team was wearing these red and white stripes, which looked very odd. I didn't get it at all. It was weird.
Craziness.